okay, so we gotta change the name of our club. Turns out our club's not too family friendly when it comes to naming conventions of the 1990s. So anybody feel Rectangle Club? No? No hands for Rectangle Club? All right, what about Triangle Club? Too edgy? You think it's too edgy? Okay, how about the Circle Club? Yeah, good. We finally decided on something. We're talking about X-Men, the animated series, season 3, part 2. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are back talking about X-Men, the animated series, in X-March. And here we are talking about the last half of season 3 of the show. We are past the halfway point. Oh, my gosh. I can see light at the end of the tunnel, but I need the weird non-canon version of a known X-Men Marvel race. Miles, how are you, friend?
I'm good. Every week I want to do something silly and do like a little like voice, but then all of it just like, especially if you're doing like Gene stuff, it all just comes off as super sexual.
Yeah.
Be like, Drew. You know, just it always comes off as like, oh, this just sounds weird. And I think I was initially planning on doing some sort of like Wolverine. Like Wolverine has a lot of exasperated cries in this latter half.
He starts to sound a little bit like the Tasmanian devil.
No, he absolutely does. But also there's episodes where like you hear him do that and you're like, but why is he doing it? Like there's a specific one, a specific phone call that I think you know exactly what I'm talking about, where it's like, what happened? In actual, he just turns around and walks in the desert. He doesn't like, he's not being attacked by anything.
Everywhere. I think I figured out what was going on at that point, but we'll get to that when we get to that, because that's an episode we're going to have to talk about. But let's go back and talk about what we're talking about today. So we have a couple of standalone episodes here, and we have a couple of multi-part episodes. And the first episode that we have to talk about is episode 11, Cold Comfort, where we are introduced to good old fashioned Bobby Drake, the Iceman. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I remember being so excited about this episode as a kid because I was a big Iceman fan and was kind of bummed that he wasn't in this show. Now he wasn't really in, no, he wasn't the X-Men proper, I think, at the time of this show, but I don't think he was, I think he might've been doing other things. Because I think that's when they had split the team. You know, X-Men was Team Gold, and then Uncanny X-Men was Team Blue, or however they split it up at the time. And I don't love this episode, Drew. I want to, but like,
I have to say, I think this might be the strongest episode of this arc of the season.
Really?
Yeah, for me. But we'll get into that. So this episode is all about Bobby Drake searching for Lorna Dane. Is that her name? Lorna Dane?
Mm-hmm. Lorna. Yeah.
Lorna, who is better known to X-Men fans as the mutant Polaris, a.k.a. Magneto's daughter, though they do not bring that up at all.
Yeah, and it's always a is she, isn't she situation with that. Polaris has always had questionable sanity and bouts of it. And honestly, questionable sanity here because, like, she stages what looks like a kidnapping.
Yeah,
to this, get away from her boyfriend because she doesn't agree with his politics.
So we find out that Lorna and Bobby were original founding members of the X-Men, and we get flashbacks to those old school 60s X-Men costumes. You've got Jean in her green dress. You've got, you know, the rest of the team and they're all blue, like Cyclops with the full head covering situation. And we find out that Bobby didn't take things seriously enough, especially for Cyclops. And so they went their separate ways. But as it turns out, Lorna felt like they, and then he goes and works as an accountant in an office and he's totally cool. I love the idea that they leave a team of superheroes because he can't keep his stuff together. And he goes and literally works as an accountant, which is where you would need to keep your stuff together even more. And he's perfectly happy doing that. But anyway, but as it turns out, Lorna is
Which is not something I bought. Like, even as a kid, I was like, that is not Bobby.
Yeah. And as it turns out, Lorna is not. And Bobby goes to her apartment and finds it completely trashed. Doesn't know what's going on, except for a name that turns out to be this military base. And he keeps trying to break into this military base and find Lorna. And as we learn through the course of the episode, this is a military base where the government has their own team of mutant superheroes that also wear the X-Men logo, even though they're not X-Men.
Yes. So X-Factor, that's what they became. The initial version of X-Factor was a book starring the original X-Men. That was the big thing because there were so many freaking X-Men.
Yeah.
They wanted a book about the original X-Men going on certain adventures together. That turned into a book about the first officially government-sponsored mutant team. And this is there. I thought Forge was an X-Force, but he might have been an X-Factor. I can't remember.
I remember teams, Forge and X-Force, but maybe because he was on later X-Force teams. I know he was on the Krakoan X-Force team.
New Mutants, X-Force, and X-Factor. Well, because New Mutants became X-Force. They have a lot of interchanging people, and people who are at X-Force end up being at least like in X-Factor investigations and stuff like that. So there is that. And
also notable, this is not Forge's first appearance on this show, but this is Forge's first present day appearance on the show.
Yes.
We have only ever seen him as Old Man Forge from the Days of Future Past and later flash forward episodes, and I think it's hilarious that he's so young here in comparison, but he still looks really
young. And so this all like comes to a head, and because in these cartoons, which is one of the funniest things about the X-Men cartoons, no one has a conversation, so it's just we're gonna fight.
Just ready to fight.
We get the most awkward exchange between Cyclops and Havok. And it's one of those instances where, like, you can tell what the show is trying to do because, like, the show has established that a lot of these characters have had pasts. And even this episode, there have been other X-Men. So there is this whole situation where it seems like Havok and Cyclops know each other. But it also doesn't. And they're also like,
I didn't read that they knew each other at all, which
there's a specific thing that Cyclops says where it gives an indication that he might be familiar with Havok.
It is important to note for people who do not follow the comics at all that Cyclops and Havok are brothers. They are the sons of Corsair, the Starjammer. Which comes up the backstory. Well, it kind of comes up because we only learn Scott's take in any of this, but, the reason that their powers do not work on each other because of the circumstances of their powers manifesting, they were clinging to each other.
I still don't really buy. I've never bought. And I mean, this is in the comics too. And
I like that.
I don't think there's any other sibling set of mutants that's happened.
That makes them
like,
unique and
Husk
fun.
And Cannonball and like I think that's not a situation to them. Endpoint and Penance, it's not really a situation. Well, they have a whole thing. And Monet, St. Croix. Who are the other siblings? Or at least related.
Scarlet
like,
Witch.
Tom Cassidy and Banshee. Like
Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
The less said about those two weirdos, the better.
But even still, I have always liked the idea that because they were, well, and we'll get to the full story later, but as a manifestation, they're both started, their powers manifested to save both of their lives as they were falling from a plane. And as a result, their powers inherently do not harm the other, which is important to know when Havoc and Cyclops in this episode are fighting each other and their powers just don't work on each other and they have no idea why and they're frustrated by it, which is just funny. And clearly they do not know each other and they don't know what's going
on. It's a very awkwardly done scene because we also find out later that like Cyclops knows he has a brother named Alex.
Well, because he would have been old enough for the key is not that he knows he has a brother named Alex, but that he knows his brother survived, despite the fact that we know that Cyclops was in an orphanage and did not have a brother at that orphanage.
Not only that, but like his brother was strapped to him. So like she should have known pretty quickly whether or not he survived. Like
unless
they do not articulate that backstory well at all.
Not in the slightest, because because in this scene, it is as if, and it's not like Havoc's wearing a mask. They just
right. He's wearing like the little side thing that like Gambit has.
That 90s that freaking side mask nonsense.
I mean, it's better than his old outfit, so that's fine
fair,
too.
Fair.
And I mean, Havoc's had some interesting stories. He really has. I wish they would have done something better with him. And then it's like, oh, well, we knew the X-Men were not a problem. We just wanted to have a little sparring match.
Have a little sparring match, yeah. So in addition to Havoc, we've got Polaris, of course. We've got Forge, who doesn't really do anything. But I'm going to be 100% honest with you, Miles. I didn't know what Forge's mutant powers were until I was reading Krakoa-era books. Because they never really talk about what it is. Forge's mutant powers are that he's really good at designing things. That's his mutant power. There's a strong guy who I'm not sure even has a line in this episode.
He does not.
There is Multiple Man, who has the worst voice for Multiple Man that I've ever heard in my life, as well as the worst costume for that character that I have ever seen.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And then there was what is her name? The
Feral.
Feral, yeah.
Was it Feral or Wolfsbane?
I thought it was Wolfsbane.
Okay, I couldn't remember which one, because they're very similar characters.
It looked more like Wolfsbane to me, but
I can check real quick. Yep, it's Wolfsbane. Both are X-Factor, X-Force characters. It's just a matter of, you know, which one they want to use. So that was Rain Sinclair, I think, is her name. If I'm looking at the other, yeah, Rain. Who was also in the New Mutants movie as well. She is typically an X-Force member, but I think joined X-Factor Investigations later down the road.
Yeah, when obviously she's associated with X-Factor here, but yeah.
Or no, I'm sorry, she was X-Factor first. Again, some of these characters, okay, I go in and out of these books so much, but and if you saw the New Mutants movie, she was the one that was portrayed by Maisie Williams.
Mm. So yeah, we find out that this whole thing was a total scam, and now Polaris is in love with Havoc, and Bobby is see you guys then, I guess. Weird.
And I mean, Bobby and Polaris have a rough and tumble go of things in the comics too. So it's just, the whole thing just felt weird.
Well, you mentioned this earlier, but I have to land on it again. The way that she disappears from Bobby's life is by making it look like she was kidnapped. What a weird, weird thing to do. Well, it's so strange.
It's like, yo, if you don't want him to come looking for you, just leave a Dear John letter or something.
Exactly. Like, it's so, so strange.
It was, again, this is why I don't love it. And this is also like the last time where you see Jubilee much this season, for the most part. Like,
she's in the Savage Land two-parter.
She's in the Savage Land two-parter, which we're not going to really talk about that because it's not good. But like, she's absent for the rest of the season. Like, she's not in the Dark Phoenix saga.
It is so wild as well.
And then she's not in the other episodes. It's just like, yep, Jubilee's elsewhere.
I wonder if they were getting feedback that she was not a liked character or something.
But she was a liked character. She was like, all those X-Men were super popular.
And you mentioned she wasn't part of the Phoenix saga either, because she didn't go to space with them.
Yes, I think they actually give a reason in that one, like that's too dangerous or something.
Well, they give a reason here too, that she needs to prep the medical facilities in case they need them or blah blah blah. It's like, all right, whatever.
I wish they had just written her as the substitution for Kitty Pryde, because the Hellfire stuff is very, very...
I'm sorry, the what stuff?
We'll get there. but that aspect of the Dark Phoenix saga, you know, they lose that character entirely. So you could have had Jubilee being the Kitty Pryde type character, which was her lot in this series to begin with.
Yeah, it just seemed like they didn't know what to do with her, and they needed to give all the good quippy lines to Wolverine anyway. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's, they don't even have like the most famous line from that thing is when he gets shot down and disappears for an entire issue. And then like after everyone's captured, or whatever, you see him kind of popping up from the sewer. He's like, all right, you took your best shot. Now it's my turn. Like, a classic comic book line, but like it was a big like finish, and the cover is super iconic. A lot of the covers from the Dark Phoenix saga, super iconic, and they utilize some of those things because the way that he pops out of the water, like you get to see that adaptation of that cover that you see. They do the Marvel Girl outfit for Jean at the end of the Dark Phoenix saga. So there is this like cool deference to the source material that does come up consistently throughout the show, and I really like it. It's just sometimes the writing is just so wild.
Yeah. So let's give 5 seconds to the Savage Land. Savage Land, Savage Heart, parts 1 and 2. This was so forgettable. I do not remember what happened in this, except Sauron is there, and there's a Garrok who is a rock guy. I don't care. I'm sorry, people who love the Savage Land. I don't care, and I don't want to spend any more time talking
about it. It's not the Savage Land itself that's the problem, I don't think. But yeah, I absolutely don't care about the Savage Land in general. But I don't know. This story isn't good. It's just kind of a sequel to, or an epilogue to, the stuff that happened with Sinister in season 2. And I didn't want more of that.
The only interesting thing that I recall about this is I learned that Sauron can turn back into a human when he runs out of power. That's a thing I did not know about Sauron. And also they go and they take a little plane that was Magneto's, and when they start it up, it has a bunch of preset destinations on it, and one of them is Asteroid M, which has not shown up in the show yet, but will show up next week or next season. So that's an interesting little tidbit of foreshadowing that I thought was interesting. Otherwise, yeah, let's talk about the Dark Phoenix.
Okay. So this one, I mean, I remember when this came out and it was a big deal. Like, I remember everyone at school was talking about the Dark Phoenix saga. And I remember it being so explosive and dramatic, and it is super melodramatic, but like, I think, you know, some things age better than others. And
Miles, I have an honest question for you before we get started with this.
Yeah.
Do I just not remember them recovering Jean's body?
I think there's like maybe an offhand line somewhere, but no, I was like, they have Jean's body for what?
The last thing I remember is in the episode where Scott goes on his little, side quest with WizKid and, Streaks and Boom Boom, that they mentioned at the very end that Jean is alive, but I don't remember them finding her and taking her to Moor Island and studying her. I feel like I missed that completely. I do not remember that happening.
You didn't. No, it was something we both commented on because I was like, oh, I guess they found Gene. Yep.
Yeah, so anyway, Jean's been on Muir Island where they have been trying to help her separate from the Phoenix, and it doesn't go well. So there's that.
On a whole, I did enjoy the fact they were able to, like, you know, kind of cram the entire Dark Phoenix saga into four episodes. I kind of wish they had spent a little more time doing some of this stuff because, I mean, it mirrors many things. It gets the broad strokes of the comic pretty well. I think one of the biggest misses for me, other than, you know, just common, like, oh, that's kind of funny, is that when the Phoenix has completely taken over and leaves Earth for a little bit, she destroys a dead solar system. And they're very, very adamant to point out that the solar system is barren. And because the Shi'ar person, like, monitoring the situation is like, had that been populated, billions of lives would have been lost.
Yeah.
And from what I remember, it's been quite some time since I've read the Dark Phoenix saga, but from what I remember, she actively destroyed billions of lives, and that's why the Shi'ar are after her, because they want to try her for the lives murder that she cost.
Yeah.
Yes. And I feel like it's a little bit weaker to be like, oh, well, we can't have one person be that powerful. She could be a problem. And that's where it gets a little dicey for me. I'm almost certain that she murdered billions of people in the comic, and they just didn't want to put that in a children's cartoon.
Fair. You know, fair. So let's break down some of this. So I'll be honest, I think I mentioned this in previous weeks, I've never read the Phoenix Saga, nor have I read the Dark Phoenix Saga. So this is one of the few.
Ooh, we gotta do that sometime then, because, like, I mean, one of the first, it's not that first graphic novel, but one of the first graphic novels I ever owned was the Dark Phoenix Saga. Like, I have a specific memory of going to work with my dad at his office, and to keep me occupied during the lunch break, he took me to Walden Books and let me pick out a graphic novel. And I bought the Dark Phoenix Saga and, like, devoured that thing, like, over and over again. And that's why some of the stuff, like, does come off weird. Like, the Shi'ar vessel that warns Lilandra gets destroyed. Like, Phoenix also wipes that out too. And so they're like, okay, she's a more serious threat than, like, Galactus, and therefore must be destroyed.
So we haven't even really talked about where this whole thing starts. And it actually starts with a callback to the Phoenix Saga, where they were very smart to plant some seeds when the Phoenix entity emerges and it psychically impacts, you know, all these people across the planet. One of the people that we see impacted is Emma Frost. And so here we are with the Circle Club and the Inner Circle, trying to manipulate Jean and the Phoenix into joining their crew of evil.
Yeah. Again, it must have been something to, like, skirt by, you know, some parent groups that were becoming louder and louder in the mid 90s. Well, we can't have them be called the Hellfire Club.
It was literally changed because they were trying to avoid Satanism as a concept.
Right. Yeah, even though the Satanic Panic had long passed. It's so funny because, yeah, they just call it the Circle Club, which just sounds like a Circle K,
well, like, membership. They mostly refer to themselves as the Inner Circle in the show. There's only really one instance that they call themselves the Circle Club, and it stands out really, really silly.
Exactly, because fans know exactly what it is. Because, I mean, everything else down to, like, everyone wearing, like, freaking 19th century attire, like, everything is one for one for the most part. But they just call themselves the Circle Club, and it's the dumbest thing in the entire world. And it just makes everything seem sillier. I don't know why them having the name Hellfire Club would make it any better. That there's still this weird group of people who like, oh, I'm the Black King, and we got a new Black Queen, and
blah. And that's the other thing that they don't really focus on either, is like all their chess piece names and things like that. Yeah. Like they don't mention that at all. I think they refer to when Dark Phoenix finally joins the group, they refer to her as their queen, but it's not like, you know, they actually do in the Hellfire Club.
And again, I kind of hate, like, I understand why, like, the Phoenix is supposed to be kind of, and they even talk about how, like, being imprinted on a human changes the way that Phoenix acts, because she's not had access to the emotional spectrum as the way that as humans feel, and which is what's messing with her. And especially because it's Jean who is very emotional.
Scott, Logan.
It's something to explain later, but when you're watching it, you're like, why is the Phoenix kind of stupid? And they do a better job explaining why things happen later on, because the Phoenix ends up popping up and being like, oh, yeah, sorry, that's my bad. Oopsies.
Wow. And, see you guys later.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally how this version of the Phoenix Saga ends, because I believe in the comic, they just flat out kill her.
I mean, Jean does not survive the Dark Phoenix Saga in the comics, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And but, I think she dies. I think like the Phoenix leaves her, and that's why she activates, well, like she does in this. She activates the a weapon on the ship that disintegrates her. Where this one, it's just like, oh, she's trying to save everyone or some nonsense, and. So they do a different situation here. They don't actively kill Jean, which I really, I mean, it was always kind of like curious whether or not they would. She dies, but every X-Men gives a little bit of their life force so that the Phoenix would bring Jean back to life.
Which is stupid, because all you have to do is take Wolverine's life force because it'll grow it back.
I mean... Yeah, they could have done something with that.
What? Well, Wolverine
and Cyclops are arguing over who they're going to sacrifice.
Speaking so of Wolverine and Cyclops, there are moments when because the Circle Club is using their abilities to control Jean and the Phoenix with some weird like 1800s romance novel plotting, but from time to time, Jean will have a psychic impression with Scott and, you know, Scott, Jean, and nothing happens then. But the second that Phoenix is about to kill Logan, and this happens multiple times, that is what breaks her out of her. Yeah. her Phoenix persona. And that to me is real interesting.
Yeah, I mean I love the fact that they did this. I love that they've done both Phoenix sagas, and at the time it was a blast to watch. You know, I mean the type of writing that was happening is just a little more stilted. It's like, were it to be done today, it probably would have been a lot more. It would have more of a natural flow to it. Probably would have been the entire season. Honestly,
probably like.
And it is a story that they have tried to adapt to live action twice now and failed miserably both times.
And it's honestly, it's a difficult story to tell because there are so many moving pieces that I just.
Well, I think it's a difficult story to tell for live action because the people that make these movies don't trust their audience. And it wasn't until the MCU actively involved like cosmic stuff. And everyone was like, yeah, it's fine. Because in both adaptations, none of the space stuff is involved. And like in X-Men The Last Stand, it's like, oh, it's a multiple personality of Jean. And then in the other one, it's there is a latent power, but like, I don't think it's extraterrestrial. It is extraterrestrial, but like it's not related to the Shi'ar at all, I don't think.
Yeah. I have not seen any, obviously I've seen X3, which is not good. I have not seen any of the Sansa Stark Jean Grey movies.
You know what? I love her cast as Jean. I mean, after this many times, the mall sequence, the deleted mall sequence in X-Men Apocalypse, that's what I wanted those movies to be, because they're supposed to be young X-Men, and it would have been far more interesting than all the adults running around. But, you know, a lot of people like to blame her for the role, and it wasn't her fault. It was how she was written.
Yeah, which is true for so many of the... The other thing, they fight in the last episode on the blue section of the moon.
Yes, the blue side of the moon, whatever.
Which they find a bunch of ruins there. Pretty sure that's a city that Apocalypse ran at some point. One of Apocalypse's bases was there.
It's also like, I mean, it's the base of the Watcher, Uatu, who we see a glimpse of. And I really wish that they had included the scene from the comics where, like, while searching for the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, Wolverine stumbles into Uatu's like home base or whatever, and just gets like popped out. It's a really fun, it's a weird, funny sequence that I wish was still in there.
I it's also the future home of the Summer House, which is where the Summers family lives, adjacent to Krakoa.
The Summers and Wolverine.
And Wolverine.
The thruple thrives.
Ooh-wee.
Which is explicitly basically stated in the comics.
Yeah, it's there's a map of what doors connect to what rooms, and it's a known thing, awesome. Gang. It's a known thing.
I love it so much.
Also, the Gladiator has a different voice in this arc, mm-hmm. which drives me crazy.
Yeah, that doesn't really bother me. What I don't love as much are the next two episodes.
Well, I will stand up for 45% of episode 18.
Yeah, Orphan's End honestly is not bad. It gets a little goofy, but there is some really good stuff in there. It also, like, there has just been this groundswell movement because the writing of Cyclops has improved drastically in the last 30 years. But Cyclops was written pretty close to how he was written in the show, and people are bringing up stuff about, like, oh, no, he did this, this, and this. I'm like, yes, later. But Cyclops in the comics at this time sucked as much as... Cyclops in the cartoon sucks.
So, and what Orphan's
even when he's in the right, which he is at one point in this episode, he still sounds insufferable.
Yeah. So this episode is all about Corsair is trying to save somebody. We don't even really know. And he's on the run from the Shi'ar, and he crashes his ship right outside the X mansion. And in a little fisticuffs with good old Cyclops. Cyclops grabs these dog tags around his neck as Corsair falls over, and turns out, whoops, he's your dad, bro. And we now are basically getting the backstory of Corsair and what happened to him and why, and Scott feeling a lot of real, like honest, actual abandonment, before finding out the full story, because again, nobody in these comics or the show specifically can have a conversation before they fly off the handle about stuff.
Right.
But yeah. And we end it's the whole backstory with the plane going down, being attacked by the Shi'ar for test subjects, and pushing the boys out of the plane with the parachute, and we see the parachute has caught fire. We do not see how they survived the landing, which, you know, is something that I mentioned earlier in the show. But it is also, they did the same thing in the comics to just prove that Corsair had no reason to believe that his kids were alive. And because the last thing he saw of them was their parachute on fire careening towards a mountain. And his wife, of course, died in space, so he may as well live a fancy space pirate life. But yeah, so we really need to, Miles, talk about the havoc of this whole situation.
Yeah.
What is the deal? I don't get it. I do not understand. I don't get it. Scott mentions his brother Alex as if he knows he is alive. He did not know that he was Havoc 6 episodes ago. He doesn't seem to have any interest in calling his brother to tell his brother that his father is alive. My personal like headcanon is that once they were rescued, they were separated and put into different orphanages. So Scott knows that he has a brother somewhere and knows that his brother is alive, but doesn't know anything about him. And because Scott is a real cool dude, he never bothered to look for him.
Yeah. I mean, so much of the semantics and logic of this story sucks. I mean, I hate saying that because, I mean, the pace of this entire show was to be super positive and objective about things. But there are parts of this show that just are bad. Like, and it's not that the show is bad. And it's not like you can't have fun. I had a blast with all these as a kid. I still have a blast watching them now because you are watching moving comic books in all of their melodramatic glory. It's just, you kind of wish that, like, there was a flourish of modern writing in this specific cartoon because so much of it works so well. Yeah. And this is an opportunity to tell a really, really good story. And emotionally at times they very much do this. There are some great moments between Scott and Corsair.
Yeah.
There really are.
They have some real brutal honesty with each other. And, you know, Scott doesn't handle that. And honestly, Scott handling it poorly is pretty on brand if you thought your dad was dead for 20 years and it turns out he's absolutely been a funky space pirate.
I think where it falls for me, I don't know that there was a show Bible. I think they were just constantly trying to like adapt classic issues of the comic book, and they were always kind of at odds of like, okay, we'll adapt this to the best of our ability right now. And
now that in itself is a big question. Was there a show Bible? Because we've seen them do very effective foreshadowing for stuff.
Yeah.
But that's usually foreshadowing within the same season. Like we saw Emma Frost in the Phoenix Saga last week. And of course shows up in the Dark Phoenix Saga. We do also have some other bad foreshadowing when it comes to any of the stuff with Cable, because Cable shows up in the first season as just this random dude before we know anything about him. So I don't know. Maybe that's I'm trying to go back to season 1 and 2 to see if we can find anything else. It is notable that the animation quality has gotten so much better from season 1 to season 3 right now. But
I think it sometimes sticks out, especially since I've been a lifelong X-Men fan and the mutant world. And the mutant world is also very convoluted and complicated. It is a soap opera. Like, it is much more of a soap opera than Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's a soap opera. But like, the X-Men is a soap opera. Well,
unlike Spider-Man, the X-Men focuses on like 40 different characters at one time.
Well, there's also like Marvel could have and effectively does when they're firing all cylinders, its own imprint of just mutant titles.
Yeah,
like all the mutants could be on their own planet Well, they have effectively done that too.
Yeah.
And have their own series of titles and be separate from Marvel entirely, and it'd be fine. And most of the cool Marvel characters tend to be mutants, like always has been.
Yeah.
But I think that's what makes some of this stuff kind of frustrating, because we know that they have the propensity to talk about the histories of some of these characters and that things have happened. But it's why I don't think there's a show Bible, because sometimes these things conflict with either prior episodes within the same season or just how they've talked about things. Like, really, I don't had Scott mentioned Alex before this?
I don't recall. No,
I don't think so.
And this is one of those things where I was trying to think about, you know, well, in the comics at the time, did we know that Cyclops and Havok were brothers? Yes, we did, because Havok had a dumb 60s costume. So,
yeah, we did.
We did not yet know that that Sunspot or whatever his name is working for the Shi'ar was the third Summer's brother. But that's a whole other weird conversation.
He wasn't even invented yet.
Or was in this cartoon. So
Vulcan is not.
That wasn't. Was that not
Vulcan?
Him?
Vulcan doesn't appear until like 2005.
Who was that on the on the ship?
You talking about Gabriel Summers?
You know what? I'm getting him confused with somebody else. There's another dude.
I think you're confusing him with actual Sunspot.
Yeah, I think I am doing that. Yeah,
because you mentioned Sunspot, and they have somewhat similar power sets. It's weird. Because the third Summers brother was this big mystery for like 15 years, and they finally did it in like, I think it was 2006, maybe. And it was another set of Professor Xavier harbors a dark secret. And it was like before the new X-Men went to Krakoa to save the original X-Men, he had initially came up with another team and they all died. And it was dumb.
Yeah. Well,
honestly,
speaking of things that are dumb, let's talk about the last episode of this season.
The last episode,
you know,
it's not only dumb. It's not only a weird adaptation of an iconic X-Men villain. It is so problematic.
So this is weird to me, Miles, because I'm looking at the air dates of this. Mm-hmm, so Orphan's End, the second to last episode of the season, aired in February 25th of 1995. Season 4, episode 1, airs May 6th, 1995. Then we get this episode, February 10th, 1996, almost a year later. And we don't get the rest of season 4 until September of 1996.
Wild.
What a weird set of circumstances.
Yeah.
Like, they had the episode we're going to watch first next week already done, but they didn't air this episode until the middle of the next season, which makes sense because this episode is completely meaningless and extremely weird and maybe one of the darkest episodes they've done because of the fate of a particular character.
Well, also, I mean, there's some non-consensual stuff that happens in this episode that is, I mean, it's just crazy.
Oh, it's turbo bad. It's turbo bad.
Yeah.
So
it's, I mean, like Rogue essentially gets date raped in this thing. It is dark.
Yeah, she's definitely drugged, at least. Let's just say that.
She's drugged and then impregnated with the alien babies. So,
well, this is not alien babies. It's forced to turn her into an alien, which is a whole
other thing. So that she will produce more aliens. it's this bad. Thing gave me the heebie-jeebies. It's bad.
It's bad.
But here's the thing. It's not just this that makes it bad.
No, it is nonsensical. It is. So Miles and I, and we don't talk about this on the show. I comment about Rogue privately to him fairly often when I am watching these, because Rogue's whole deal is that if she touches another being, she will steal their energy. And as a result of this, whenever she's in costume fighting bad guys, she wears gloves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet, up to this point, 99% of the time when she is not in her X-Men uniform, no gloves. In the first episode of this show, she is walking around the mall not wearing gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And in this episode, we see her effectively in her pajamas by herself in her room in the X-Mansion reading a book. A book that just says romance novel on the cover. That's what it says.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
And Miles, what does she have on by herself in her room alone? She's wearing gloves. I don't get it. It drives me crazy. I don't understand it.
I love it. I love it. I love it because, like, you might have mentioned it in a couple episodes. This is like Drew's like white whale. Like, this thing sets him off. Because I hear about it like on the regular.
And they make a big deal anytime she takes off the gloves, but they don't mention anytime they're just like out and about. Oh, sugar, I'm going to go get a new outfit. And she's not wearing gloves. What if the person that wants to, hands them the bag and wants to shake her hand or something? Oh, okay, no big deal. I'm not going to wear my gloves then. It drives me crazy. You know, you don't wear gloves, Miles, and what happens to you? You get infected with spores.
That's right.
My spores. That was a line from the show. Anyway.
I do love that they constantly give her these weird and sometimes mixed, like, little idioms to say, like sometimes they're like, half of a real idiom, and then like it goes off into a wild direction and like to sound even more country. And as someone who comes from South Carolina and has heard most of these actual idioms, it's like, all right, come on now, just let her say their actual thing.
Well, they're starting to throw some Southwest stuff into her, like in the Dark Phoenix saga, she's fighting someone's like, you're half Bronco. It's like, Bronco's not a Southeastern United States term. That's a Southwestern term.
And she's from Alabama, right?
I'm not sure.
Not Louisiana. She's from Alabama or Mississippi, I think.
You got super Southern when you said Alabama or Mississippi. You got like
Alabama, Mississippi. which is funny. I don't get super Southern very often.
Anyway, in this episode, the boy that she put into a coma by kissing him suddenly shows up, proves that he can kiss her without losing his energy somehow. And as it turns out, it's because he's been infected with spores by these aliens that are never given a name, because in some form of this script, they were supposed to be the Brood, the longtime Marvel enemies, the Brood, but the Brood were deemed too scary. So they made them their own thing, and they don't make any sense. There seems to only
Wolverine keeps calling them cockroaches.
Wolverine keeps calling the cockroaches, even though they look like green lizards that also have mechanical exoskeletons. This episode does not make any sense, and it ends with this poor Cody kid. Not only has Rogue put him into the hospital with a kiss, but now, as a result of his association with her, he's been turned into an alien lizard, and that's just who he is now. There's no turning him back. They're not going to rescue him or save him. He just goes off with the aliens at the end, and that's the end of that chapter. Wolverine does a lot of weird grumbling and grunting on a phone call, which we said we're going to talk about. I think his groans on that phone call were his body fighting back the spores.
I mean, I think that's also probably what's going on. But like, he even says they're everywhere. I can't fight them all off. And I'm like, you just walked away.
There were literally five of them. There were only ever five of them on screen.
Yeah. And it was very, very funny. And you get some of the wildest, like, Wolverine yells that you can think of.
And you also just get more poor Rogue decision making, because all of a sudden she can kiss Cody again. And so now this is the man she's going to spend the rest of her life with.
Oh, she is down to class, which you can't blame her. That's a consistent thing with Rogue, that she craves, like, being able to touch another person. Like, when you're isolated for that long, that creates such a, you know, mental roadblock. So when that's lifted, I can't really fault her. Like, I feel like even in, like, any situation, she would probably do that because she gets to touch somebody, you know. That aspect of it is, like, compelling. It's just the brute of it all just doesn't work for me. Which is too bad, because this is a weird way to end the season. Is this weird, weird episode.
Well, it is, and apparently it's not how they ended the season. That's the weird thing. Like, I thought the same thing until I looked at the actual release date, and they clearly held this until the middle of the next season to show it.
It's well, honestly, they probably saw that episode like, ooh, yeah, it's not.
this is not gonna be good, gang.
Okay, we've kind of covered the entirety of season.
You know, I said the same thing about that. The Juggernaut episode aired in May of 95. And then the two-parter from next season aired in October of 95. But there's other episodes that they held until much later. This next season was all over the place with its release schedule.
I believe it.
In a way that the previous seasons were not.
A lot of those shows were all over the place. Like, absolutely.
I'm just looking at May 95, September 96, October 95, April 96, September 95, February 96, May 95, September 95, October 95, May 96. Like, it's all over the place with this release schedule. That there's probably something that we should research that. But anyway. Season 3 of X-Men the Animated Series. Definitely some high points, but I feel like there were a lot of misses in this season that we didn't really see in the last seasons. Maybe trying to do too much with what they had. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a roller coaster of quality, to be honest. I mean, again, there is something valuable in watching these characters on screen, especially in 1994, 5, and 6. There is a lot to love. Watching it as a modern viewer, obviously, we've you know, got a lot more conflicted feelings of this, you know, very, very classic comic book adaptation. And I know it sounds like we're kind of harping on it, but, like, I think what I wanted to do with this is approach it with our modern sensibilities. This cartoon, and actually the Spider-Man cartoon, has been put on a pedestal for so long. I don't know if people who have done that have actively watched that recently. And it's interesting because there are some stuff this thing knocks out of the park. I mean, there is some great stuff in this show and continues. I mean, but there's also some weird stuff that I feel like we either just didn't see back in the day. Because if you didn't see something and it wasn't on tape, you just didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know?
And again...
This Rogue episode, I never saw. I never saw this episode.
And again, and it's probably because the release schedule was super weird and they aired it all over the place. You know? Like we just talked about. I mean, there are some big hit moments. Like, I still think from last episode, the Archangel, you know, losing his sanity over his relationship with Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I still think that's really strong, even though I don't think that episode ends particularly well. And that's the thing. They shoot for the stars in this show.
And yeah, they swing. They definitely swing.
They do not always hit, but they swing. And, you know, I think it shows in the end result. We're getting better animation quality. We're getting, you know, more interesting stories. But whether those stories really play out the best way, like we had in this season, we had a lot of, you know, we had a two-parter, a five-parter, a two-parter, a four-parter, and then a few episodes mixed in between. And I think as we look at the schedule for next week, we have a lot more serialized content than we did prior, but it's a lot more two-part episodes, standalone episodes, maybe a three-parter before we really get into things. Like, we have a lot of two-part episodes next season, and we only have one four-part episode. So I feel like that is gonna be a telling thing. So let's talk about next week. I know March is about to be over, but guess what, gang? We can't stop here. We got to keep the train rolling as we continue into X-Men: The Animated Series Season 4, as we're going to cover the first 10 episodes, including the return of the Juggernaut, the return of Omega Red. We have Magneto and Asteroid M, including a new look for Wolverine's costume. We've got a flashback episode. We've got Morph returning. And we've got our first series introduction of Nightcrawler, as well as wrapping up with another time travel episode with future Wolverine. So that's going to be next week, gang. Episodes 1 through 10 of Season 4 of X-Men the Animated Series. Oh, man, we're almost done. I can feel it.
We're not.
I know.
Do you want to go ahead? We haven't talked about this. Do you want to go ahead and kind of roll out the plans for the next 2 months to kind of, because next month's going to be kind of weird because we're kind of splitting it between two larger challenges.
You know what? I don't want to.
That's on brand for you.
I mostly because I wasn't prepared to do it and you caught me off guard. But
that's pretty on brand for me.
We are going to start anime a little early this year. And that is going to, as we roll into continuing X March into April, we're going to start anime early with a series that we have talked about on this show before a long, long, long time ago.
And we've been threatening to do it for years.
But one that we are going to return to, and that I am personally going to return to after a very, very long time. That has kind of been in the news lately, if you can read between the lines with what I'm saying. And if you've been a participant in the Cosmic Crit Discord at all, you may figure out what I'm talking about. But know that I'm very, very excited to talk about it. And it may just be the beginning of conversations about this. So with that said, gang, we're going to wrap it up here today because my voice is beginning to leave me. But if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreunerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of our show going back more than a decade. If you you can also go to facebook.com/themoreunerd, Twitter at themoreunerd, or X at themoreunerd, whatever. Blue Sky at themoreunerd. Please follow us and then message us so that we have an excuse to actually talk on there, because we don't and we should. And of course, if you would like to email us, themoreunerd@gmail.com. That's themoreunerd@gmail.com. Beyond that, please go to cosmiccrit.com and check out the other show that Miles and I are on, or one of the other shows that Miles and I are on, Cosmic Crit, which is a tabletop role-playing game podcast about the Paizo RPG Starfinder, a cool sci-fi RPG. And while you're on cosmiccrit.com, look for the Cosmic Crit Discord link, where you can join that and you can talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, this is where we're gonna end the show. We end the show as we always do with a rousing nerd
out. Too nerd for y'all.